Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks for being here with us on this Thursday afternoon, or as I like to say, could be Thursday evening where you are, or maybe even Friday morning, depending on where you're listening and wherever you are. We're awful glad that you chose to take the time and spend it with us. I think you will find that a very rewarding experience today. Second hour, Jimmy Akin will be here. We'll do open forum as we usually do on Thursdays. But today, for the first hour, we have a special guest, I would say a very special guest. Dr. Angela Franks is our guest from St. John's Seminary in Boston. We were just discussing, Rusty Reno was here from First Things. We asked him, who's doing great work in theology these days? First thing out of his mouth, Angela Franks. Dr. Franks, thanks very much for being here with us.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk a bit about, you have a book about the body and identity. So we'll talk about body, identity, gender, all those things this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number if you'd like to get in on that conversation. If you thought to yourself, you know what, I'd really like to know what a really first-rate Catholic theologian thinks about all of this. Today is your day. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. So maybe you could just give us a sense of your thesis when you talk about the body and identity.
Sure, yeah. This is a book I'm working on that I argue that really what we think are body problems are actually identity problems. And by body problems, I mean, so the trans person, for example, who says, well, I'm born in the wrong body, right? That's being presented as a body problem. And they'll say that, you know, to other people, like, this is a body problem. And the medical community, at least in America, treats it like a body problem. Mm-hmm. But my contention is that it's actually an identity problem, that it's easy for us to push our identity problems onto the body because, you know, the body, it's material, it's easy to notice, and it's the kind of thing you can treat with technology, you know.
Yeah.
And I think so that seems a lot easier. If I have a body problem, you know, I'll go get surgeries or whatever, you know, I'll treat it medically. If I have a spiritual problem or a psychological problem or an intellectual problem, that cannot be treated so easily, or maybe not at all, with technology. And so I think that we default to thinking our identity problems are actually body problems, but they're not.
Again, 888-318-7884, Dr. Angela Franks, our guest. What does a Catholic to make of the body? I know that's such a basic question, but like the transgender ideology that you were just commenting on, the body seems to be something that the person almost wears. It's hard to get a handle on, well, what does the Catholic Church say the body is? It's not just something I'm wearing.
Right, yeah, the body is me. It's me, though, as material, you know? So it's not like there's more to me than my body, but my body is still me. And I think that tension, I mean, that we are not simply animals and we are not angels. We're the only creature that God made that's in this weird in-between place of being material, but also having these spiritual intellectual powers that we can reason, we're free, we can choose. And it's really easy, since we're in this in-between place, to pick sides, right? To be like, well, I'm going to double down on my intellectual or spiritual side. And Walker Percy, who's an American Catholic novelist, he calls that angelism, like this kind of like, I'm going to just sort of float above the earth, you know, and right. I'm going to pretend that the body's just something that I wear, but it's not really me. Or he said we can fall into bestialism, where we just simply think we're only matter, we're only our neurons, we're only our brain, whatever, and just sort of glorify that. And the thing is that Percy points this out, I think he's right, we can actually alternate between the two in an hour, right? It doesn't mean that,
right,
like,
yeah,
like the fact that there is, what we don't do very well is integrate the two. And so I recently wrote an article for Fair Disputations, which is an online kind of new Catholic, or not, it's actually not just Catholic, but kind of like a new way of thinking about gender and women and so forth. And I argue there that like we have a really hard time integrating our intellectual, our spiritual, our higher aspects with these material aspects. And so the church is very pro-integration.
So would that potentially be a Catholic answer to the whole transgender experience, really, that say a person having that sensing I'm in the wrong body, that we might say, well, that's an integration problem. How do we work on integration?
Exactly. It's an integration problem. It's not a body problem, right? And yeah. So just like, you know, so this is a kind of far out sort of example, but there are people out there who feel like they are meant to be paraplegics. They're like, you know, they're right. normal bodied people who can walk and move and they have all their limbs and they feel like they should be paraplegics. And there are doctors out there who will be like, sure, I'll cut your legs off. Like, actually, this is in fact the case. But that's viewing something that's really a psychological and spiritual problem as a body problem, which it's not. And so the church does something similar with transgenderism and says, you clearly are distressed by your body, but that doesn't make what you have a body problem. And I think it's really an identity problem. People are trying to find a way to be unique, to understand who they are, and they feel like their body is getting in the way. And so their first instinct is against integration, whereas the church wants us to embrace who we uniquely are, which from a God eye view, that means the saint that God made us to be. The yeah. church wants us to embrace that, but by integrating our body and not fighting our body.
It does strike me that that's an exalted view of the body. That in the Catholic view then is, if I am my body is not just a dirt suit that I'm wearing around. It's not just a flesh suit. It's not just a thing to be tolerated or abused or any, it's me, and I've and how I relate with my body is a great part of how I relate with myself.
Exactly. Yeah. It shows that the dignity of the body is that it can be united to it can be the physical expression of an intellectual, spiritual person. So the fact that a body and a person can go together, this like actually tells us something amazing about the body, that matter can do that. It's not just simply something that, you know, is simply like less than the mind or something like that, but that it has this basic dignity. And what John Paul II argues is that for us, the body expresses who we are. It's just, it's, you know, mm-hmm. angels don't have bodies. Angels don't naturally express themselves, but we are constantly expressing ourselves through our bodies, even if we're asleep, even if we're not trying. You know, we constantly make ourselves visible in the world through our bodies, and that is a really beautiful thing.
Again, 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. So would you see the transgender movement, the way that it's being kind of lived out, experimented with in our society now, as a kind of angelism, like as a kind of, I'm really a spirit in a shell kind of angelism?
I think it tends to fluctuate. Okay. And so, yeah, definitely that might be the most obvious thing, is that kind of angelism, that there's this me that's sort of internal that is at war with my body, and I've got this body that I have to kind of carry around with me, this burdensome thing, but it's not really me. And so that's definitely a kind of angelism. What you also see, though, with transgenderism is how important it is to people that their bodies be changed, right? And so in that sense, they're kind of doubling down. They're almost making their body too important, because right. the idea is, well, I cannot be happy unless my body is changed. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of, what Percy would say, a kind of bestialism, a kind of materialism, right? Where I'm investing my body, I'm both denigrating my body, but I'm investing it with too much importance. And so it's like what we see across our society in all sorts of areas, where we both idolize the body and we demean it at the same time, right? So it's right, like, you know, right. superhero bodies and supermodel bodies, and, you know, and that's like amazing. And we kind of idolize that on the one hand. And on the other hand, we're like, you know, I can't believe I'm fat. I can't believe I have wrinkles. Like, I have to get this fixed. Like, my body's letting me down, you know? So we have this weird overestimation and denigration of the body.
Right, right. And a sense that, especially in sexual relationships, there is nothing too low for the body in a certain sense.
Yeah.
That the body is a kind of tool to be used for pleasures wherever pleasures can be found.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Which is a denigration of the body, but also, I guess it's when a disordered relationship with the body is just going to express itself in different ways. It's not all going to be consistent. That's what disorder is inconsistency,
right.
Then,
yeah.
I guess. There does seem to be a kind of contagion about this, and I want to ask you about, from a theological perspective, how might we make sense of that? That it does seem to be overwhelmingly, if you took the just gross numbers of people who have a sense that they're in the wrong body, teenage girls would overwhelm that population. On television, it's middle-aged men who overwhelm that population. So we have RuPaul or we have whoever. But in reality, it's teenage girls. So what's happening? What in your sense, what's happening to cause this contagion?
The data indicate that it used to be, in fact, the middle-aged man. That when you had people coming forward with gender dysphoria, say in the 80s, 1980s or 90s or something, it was likely to be a middle-aged man. And it has flipped to teenage girls in the last, especially 5 years or so. And the numbers are quite considerable. So I think there's different reasons for that. So I think the numbers, of course, greatly increased as well in the past few decades. So I think part of that is that our sexed body is being looked as a way to hammer out classical adolescent identity challenges, crises, you know? It's become an easier, and so this has been the part of the appeal of the whole rainbow sexual identities and so forth in high schools, that it's a way not to be basic anymore, right? It's like, oh, I'm not just a basic heterosexual cis girl, right?
Cis is like the worst thing you can be.
I know. Like, it's like, yeah. Yeah. Or heterosexual. I mean, like, come on. Like, that's so boring. And so like, we have these weird phenomena where it's in the double digits, and I don't remember the number, but it's now kind of, I don't know, maybe 15% or something of at least certain populations say that they're on the rainbow, which is, it's always before was like in the low single digits.
Right.
But what you find is that, in fact, it's still in the low to mid single digits of people who act on the letter that they're claiming. So like, lots of people like to say that they're bisexual. But it's only like, maybe 40% of the people who are claiming to be bi who actually act bi. The rest just are heterosexual, right? But they call themselves bi. And so that means that this is an identity problem, right? This is a way of getting an easy, ready-made identity so I don't have to figure out who the heck I am kind of in this hard way in our crazy society that doesn't have any guidelines for that.
It seems like a trauma response. I mean, it frankly seems like a trauma response, like that young people are so traumatized, they need something to make them feel special and to make them feel like they have a place in the world.
That's interesting. I do think, that would be interesting to see. I think for sure the reason it's adolescent girls is definitely, maybe not trauma, though it could be trauma, but it's fear, definitely. I think it's the violent porn culture that they either know about or sense is really terrifying to them. And I think it's always been hard, especially, in our kind of anorexically oriented body image society, it's always been hard for girls to go through puberty and for their body to change and get kind of unwieldy. And now guys look at me and they look at my chest and like, I don't like this. And they feel very unsafe.
Right.
And I think that's, been the case for a while. But when you layer on top of that violent porn, now they feel unsafe for very, very good reasons. And I think they deal with that by going trans.
It's a way of opting out, in other words.
Yeah.
They're opting out of this mess.
Okay.
And Dr. Angela Franks is our guest. You are very welcome to call 888-3187-884. We're talking about the body and identity, and your questions are welcome right back after this.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
WTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. Just delighted to be getting to speak with Dr. Angela Franks, who, I must say, you're so much in demand. Our experience is, if she says yes to anything, get her there. So you're very, very popular. You're way more popular than we are. But we're very glad you're here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
The number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about this, the whole issue of the body and identity, and that certainly connects with all of the gender stuff that's going on today. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. I am going to go to the phones and let people talk with you. But I want to just follow up with a question about this whole idea of the kind of saying something is a body problem or assuming something is a body problem. It puts the problem in the field of, in the area of technology, which we're very comfortable with as a culture. If you say that's not actually a body problem, it takes it out of an area that we're comfortable with into one that we loathe getting into, which is souls and spirits and all of that.
Yeah, that, I think that's definitely the case. Mary Harrington calls our kind of current regime cyborg theocracy. And
I know. That's the name of my next book. Write that down. Somebody write that down. That's great. Cyborg theocracy.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And she's very concerned by this. And it's obvious, it's clearest in the gender wars, but it's certainly not only in the gender wars, where it's this idea that we're going to fix the problem of being human with, like, becoming more technologized. And it's, yeah, it's a real concern. So one of the, she has another, she's just a wordsmith. She talks about rewilding sex. Like, there's this movement, I think, in Great Britain, where she's from, to, like, return the forests to this wild state or whatever, to return the land to a wild state. And she's like, we have to do that with sex. Like, we have to get the technology out and, like, accept the fact that our bodies have their own rhythms and their own purposes and their own fertility. And our job is to integrate that,
right,
instead of trying to just stamp it out with technology.
Right. It is very hard to integrate that with a highly advanced technical society. The, right, the body actually does become less, like, if you want to travel into space, the body's very inconvenient. If you, yeah, want to, you know, if you want to live in highly dense cities, the body's inconvenient. So there's a certain way in which there's just a natural inconvenience that the modern world takes with the body.
Yeah, you know, and I'm very happy that, you know, I had a emergency C-section for one of my kids. Like, I'm very happy with technology. I'm not,
sure,
just, like, opposed to it, but the body, the kinds of restraints that the body puts on us, those are actually really healthy. It's very humbling for us, you know, because we're more than, you know, the other animals. Like, we can think, well, like, there just shouldn't be any limits at all. Like, I can think all of these things. I can think about going to space. Then why shouldn't I just be able to do it, like, right away? And why should the body limit me? And so it's part of, like, I think God's plan that we have this natural physical limit on us to make us more humble.
Again, the number 888-31-TRUTH. I am going to go to the phones. We'll start with Arthur in Lubbock, Texas, listening on Our Lady of Victory Radio. Arthur, thanks for starting us off today. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Dr. Angela Franks.
Hey, Dr. Franks. Cy's been asking some great questions, especially regarding the trauma response. My wife had a brain injury about 10 or 15 years ago that has really caused her to have a dysmorphic view of her body, to the extent that she hasn't been outside the house for the last 10 years, just like way before COVID.
Oh.
I was wondering how many of these people that have these dysmorphias have some sort of a trauma effect to them, physical, not just mental and psychological.
Yeah, thank you, Arthur. And that sounds like a very challenging situation, so my prayers. Yeah, I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't really speak to that. But I do think that we know a lot more about physical trauma these days. I know about it mostly from a former student who's worked in this field. And I think that there is a lot of unhealed trauma. And in particular around the sexual issues, I think that there's a lot of trauma that comes through inappropriate sexual relationships, whether those are illicit according to the law or not. Like, I do think people do, I think that is a definite factor. So yeah, I think that we are not often trying to heal the right things in our medical approach to these sorts of issues. And I wish that more people who present themselves to gender clinics or so forth were being given trauma healing. I think that could be a really healthy thing.
Arthur, what do you think?
Excellent. Just as a husband, what should I do to assist when someone is so ashamed of her body in every way? When she's gorgeous for a 60-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
That's, Arthur, that's so hard.
It's, yeah, that really sounds tragic. I mean, it's a wonderful thing that she has you there to tell her that, even if she doesn't believe it. But to have that loving relationship, I think, is a huge scaffolding of support. And so, like, the people that talk about successfully coming out of dysmorphia, though they might not, you know, it wouldn't have the same origin for most of these people as in your wife's case, but relationships with people who love them have been really important in those settings. So I think that is really important. And of course, any good professional trauma help that you could find, I'll pray for you.
Thank you, Arthur. Thanks very much. I wonder how much you think Dr. Franks or have thought about the connection between this view of the body, that the transgender view and all that is connected with the transhumanism movement, the whole idea that we're going to overcome our humanity, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're really the same genus. There's just different species of, but it's really the same kind of way of thinking, right? It's like, right, limits are intrinsically bad, and we'll overcome limits through technology. And so that's that kind of cyborg theocracy sort of way of thinking, that is inhumane because it doesn't respect us as human beings. As human beings, we have intrinsic limits, and that's not a bad thing. It shouldn't be demonized.
Like one of them being death. Like there's right. A whole movement to overcome death.
Yeah. What a nightmare to like live forever on this earth and not, I mean, heaven is one thing, but like, this,
right.
Oh.
Right. St. Paul is so helpful in making clear to us that we'll be transformed.
Yes.
You know, like the transformed part is really important to the living forever part.
No, right.
But there's this madness of wanting a kind of, not eternity, because that wouldn't even be possible, but just
duration.
Duration.
Yeah.
What do you gain from that?
Yeah, it's right. I just don't understand because it's like you said, the transformation, like the limits that we as Christians can embrace limits because we know that God is calling us to something better, that God is calling us to this, right, redemption of our bodies and to this union with Him and to healing. Of the kinds of things that distress us now, very real things, you know, very real suffering. And without that vision, it's just very hard. And so people don't know how to deal with limits except, I mean, if you're troubled by limits, I don't know why you want to live forever, honestly, like on this earth, you know, like it's just,
that's right.
Man.
Union with God would be the answer to that, not union with a machine that will keep you going.
Very well put.
It's a weird juxtaposition of, instead of wanting to be in union with the one who's higher than us, to be in union with what's lower than us, the machine.
Yeah. Yeah. And to kind of let the machine sort of dictate how we should be, right? Like that's part of what I think we need to push back on these days, this idea that like there's a deficit in being human that only like the machine can fix. That's kind of creepy.
Margie in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Thank you for the call. Margie, go ahead with your question for Dr. Angela Franks.
Hi, I guess it's really not a question. I am so thrilled to hear Angela's view on this, because I have felt for years there is just a huge spiritual aspect to this, that what better weapon would Satan want than to take God's greatest creation, the body, and make it seem wrong in human eyes? And so if you take that spiritual aspect of it, I feel like it makes me sad that there's not more talk of spiritual warfare aspect of this. And even the teaching of binding prayers to help especially young people understand that could be a big factor on why they're trying, their mind is rejecting their body.
We got to get Dr. Frank's response when we come back right after this. Catholic Answers Live. This year, the Catholic Answers Conference turns its attention to the question of God in an age of unbelief. Join us September 21st through 24th in San Diego for I Believe in God, featuring very special guest Scott Hahn and an all-star lineup of speakers. Spend 4 fun days with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. Seats are still available, but going fast. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 and register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
What if the voice of your deepest doubts about Catholicism rose up in the form of a human being and challenged you to defend your most foundational beliefs? That's the task apologist Trent Horn took upon himself in his new book, Devil's Advocate, a dialogue with his own best objections against the faith that he professes and defends. You can stand up against your doubts, and Trent will show you how. Pick up your copy of Devil's Advocate today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
How has the absence or presence of your dad impacted your life?
You can share tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
And now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If you're at all worried about who's preparing the priests of the next generation, we can set your mind at ease. Dr. Angela Franks is here. She teaches at the St. John's Seminary in Boston. Is it still across the street from Boston College?
It is, yep.
Yeah. Where you, your doctorate from Boston College?
Correct.
Yep. How big is the seminary? Like
about 125.
Holy smokes, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's great.
That's a lot of people. Wow. We're talking about, you do a great deal of writing on the theology, about writing and teaching on the theology of the body, on the relationship of the body to the world and the spirit and to God and all that. And so we're talking a bit about, in part, the transgender movement, but this idea of bodies as kind of the failure to integrate the spiritual and the physical, I suppose, is the way to say it. And Margie is, who's not on the line with us anymore, but left us with the, she said she's happy that you're pointing to the spiritual side of this. So maybe you want to just address that.
Yeah, I do think, you know, it is not accidental that it's these arenas of the body and sexuality, and that these sorts of things are the real areas of cultural battle today and of spiritual warfare, as she said, because It's not that these are necessarily the most serious sins, but they're the ones that literally get under your skin the most. In other words, it's like it has to do with who I am and how I understand myself and how I act in the world, as opposed to something, you know, that would also be a mortal sin, like, say, embezzling or something, right? Like that's it has a different sort of impact on me as a sinner than something like a sexual sin. And so I think that it's not accidental that this is kind of where the fight has been, you know, the church has been brought to this particular fight right now, because I do think it deals with the human person in a very essential, basic level. And that's really what we're trying to defend.
You know, you say the church brought into this battle, but the church is battling these things interiorly as well.
Right.
And I don't want to bring you into that fight, but are there, do you think there's still kind of, from conversation, there's fruitful advances to be made here, or are we in a position now where things are such a mess, we just need to focus on affirming the essential truths? Like, it does seem to me that there are parts of the church that are having really elaborate discussions of, you know, ways we can accommodate, things we can't accommodate, all that, some of which goes far too far, some of which, I don't know, might be in the middle. I'm just wondering what your view of how this conversation could be fruitful.
Yeah, I mean, there is a sense, you know, I know that people say of my theological persuasion are often accused of being obsessed with sex, but I mean, I think that that's really the culture, right? And so in a sense, we're responding to a cultural problem. The church, you know, people within the church are responding to a cultural problem. I think that, so yeah, I'm trained as a dogmatic theologian. I would love to be here, like, talking to you about the Trinity, you know,
yeah.
But right. Here we are. I'm talking about gender. So I do think there are questions, there are theoretical questions that actually faithful Catholics and Christians are really moving the ball forward in a lot of ways. There's a lot of things we hadn't really worked out about sex and gender, and good people are working those things out, and
okay.
I think that's great.
When I hear some really prominent churchmen saying things like, well, the social science has changed on homosexuality, for example, and that means the theology should change, this seems
right.
a bit like the dog wagging. No, the tail wagging the dog.
Right, yeah.
We want the dog to wag the tail. So that was a bad metaphor. But it seems like the tail wagging the dog.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we're not going to learn anything from the social sciences that is going to contradict church teaching on the human person and on morality. Because,
right.
Yeah, because what the social sciences study, they study important things. They study the data. So, like, sociology talks about aggregates, right? It's gonna analyze who's doing what and what's, you know, is there a causation, is there effect or not? But it's not gonna tell you how should you act in order to flourish. You know, I mean, psychology, I think, gets closer to that. But
right.
I think to expect that, we can't expect the social sciences to come to the church with a robust understanding of who the human person is and how we flourish. That's just not what they do. That's not their task, and that's not how they gather. That doesn't match their method. And so the church brings something to them, as you're saying.
That is a very helpful way of thinking about that. That is very helpful. Yeah, the sciences can be very, very helpful in saying what is.
Yep.
But they are not there to say what should be.
Yeah.
Not
that scientists don't say that, try to say that all the time.
Yeah,
but
right.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
I use science all the time. I learn a lot from it. I find it really helpful. I use sociological findings all the time. But you just, it doesn't provide you with a philosophy and a theology. You have to bring that to the science.
Right. And so we are getting the order wrong if we're saying the social science it should tell the theologian or even the faithful person what to think about sin.
Yeah, that's
it. Oh, yeah. Let's go to Tina in Austin, Texas, listening on 9:10 a.m. Tina, we're glad you're here with us. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Angela Franks.
Yeah, just real simply, how is this being looked at in terms of the new forms of communication that are available now that were not a very short time ago? I just think that this whole internet thing has dwarfed the invention of the printing press in terms of how it changed the world.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a program earlier. It wasn't maybe this station because I'm traveling, but A woman called in with a little kid in her life. I don't know if it was a grandson or nephew or what. He thinks he's a girl ever since his baby sister was born, and she's 2 and he's 5. So, come on, are you telling me, oh, see, this is really a thing? I don't think so. I think it's just everybody's hearing about it, and it's like, oh, isn't this different?
Right. Our grandparents would have had the sense to make no deal about that at all.
Right.
Just let it be.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty normal thing for kids to role play, and, you know, that's not a sign at all of any particular ism whatsoever. But as you said, we just wouldn't make a big deal of it. The contagion factor, the social contagion of identifying as trans or as some other kind of gender, that is definitely fostered. It's the gasoline, really, for this. It's found in the internet and in social media, where you have influencers and you've got friend groups, and it's like, here, try, this is a cool identity. Look how happy it's made me. I think we wouldn't have our current situation without the internet.
It's funny when Tina was talking about this new technology dwarfing the printing press, which I think she is right about. The way we use the technology changes our relationship to our body too, in the sense that I have noticed that if I'm, you know, scrolling in the evening or something, it's a kind of an out of body experience. It's the body is just left out. I'm traveling the world. Like, you know, I hear something about the new movie about Napoleon, and I think, what is Corsica like? I go to Google Maps. I go to Corsica for a few minutes. Well, that's really weird that I can do that without my body doing anything except this one finger moving on a screen.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the kind of, the sense that I should have no limits, because look what we can do as human beings, right? We don't have to, exist with limits. So it kind of fosters that. And so I do think a big, like a simple practical step, and it actually parents who have children who are struggling with gender issues, who have been well informed on these things know that one of the most important things to do is to try to reinstate a healthier relationship with technology for their kids. Like, this is just really, really important. And that includes not just like not getting on bad sites and that sort of thing, but like just using less of it,
right?
You know, like just having a more ordered relationship, so that I remember, oh yeah, I actually have a body. I'm not actually floating in the internet somewhere, but I actually exist here and now in this chair.
Yeah, like one of the ways to have a good, healthy relationship with reality is to live in reality.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
To live.
Yeah, and that's actually really important. I think more and more parents are realizing that it's not just, I've got the porn blockers on, and I've got the computer is where we can see what the kid. No, it's about just the sheer amount of time or the intensity of what's happening during that time that's taking the child out of reality and distorting their view of reality.
Yeah.
Is that what you were getting at, Tina?
Yeah, but it's affecting public policy in such a way insurance premium payers are forced to pay for abortions because the science, quote unquote, when it was in the 60s, basically inflated the numbers of women who were dying from illegal abortions by, you know, hundreds of percent, even though even one death from an illegal abortion is too many. And now you've got this going on, and we've got taxpayers paying for transitions for people in the military, and insurance premium payers paying for all these surgeries. And can you imagine getting a little kid that, you know, is 5 years old on hormones just because they're telling you that they feel like the other gender?
Right.
Let's, you know, keep milking that, and then when it looks like he's about to start going through puberty, let's, you know, give him shots of estrogen. Oh, that's a great idea.
Dr. Franks?
Yeah, this is a really important point that people don't often think about, that when you quote-unquote transition medically or surgically as well, that is not a one-off kind of thing, like getting your appendix out or something. That what you're signing up for is a lifetime of medicalization. And so this is one reason. It helps to explain, in fact, why There's been, like, why large pharmaceutical companies, for example, or hospital chains or so forth are so eager to engage in this kind of quote-unquote treatment, because it really connects people. It's like being hooked up to the machine as a transhumanist, right? You're hooked up to the hormones for the rest of your life. You're surgically giving yourself wounds that your body will fight for the rest of its life. And so that's, you know, it's not, it shows how unnatural it is and how much our bodies fight back, that in some ways, like, the natural processes of our bodies can be smarter than we are, because they know, like our body is always kind of pushing itself to be ordered in a healthy kind of way, and we're the ones, you know, like, it's my mind, it's my ideas that's disrupting what my body naturally wants to do.
And teenagers are notoriously incapable of the idea of permanence. I mean, I don't mean that to denigrate them. That's just not what the brain at the teenage years is arranged to do, to think, oh, this has irreversible consequences. I will never get over this.
I mean, what they'll say is, I don't want to get over it. And they mean it at the time.
Right.
And then, you know, 5-10 years later, they might not still mean it.
And then that's tragic.
Very
because
tragic.
In many cases, they've been sterilized at that point. As you said, the body has been wounded in a way that it's going to be coping with the rest of that person's life.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tina. We got to take a quick break. Right back with more with Dr. Angela Franks on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
One of the reasons we should go to Mass is because it is the food of the saints that we receive. And for the saints, they understood rightly that the time after Holy Communion, that those moments are the most precious moments of our lives.
The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, live from the EWTN Chapel, every morning, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, as I said, Jimmy Akin will be here with us. We'll do open forum. You can ask anything you like because it's Jimmy. This hour, Dr. Angela Franks is our guest from St. John's Seminary in Boston, Massachusetts, where they have more than 100 men preparing to be priests. That's pretty cool. And they come from all over, or just
all
New
over.
England? Or,
yeah, oh, mostly
oh, wait,
New England,
no, you
but
said
all over.
Some come from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Was that secret?
Cool.
Was I not supposed to say that? No.
I don't think it's secret.
Okay. I didn't want to be alerting the Vietnamese government that there were men outside
the
country.
Hopefully the Vietnamese government listens to this program.
Yeah,
that would be a good sign.
Thank you, Angela. That's what we hope as well. 888-318-7884, the number. We're talking about the body this hour and the Catholic understanding of the body. Dr. Franks is a theologian who, what do you call yourself, a doctrinal theologian?
Dogmatic. Or systematic theologian.
But who also does a lot of work in moral theology and the theology of the body. And your questions are welcome, 888-318-7884. Going to Illinois now. Morgan's in Illinois. Morgan, thank you very much for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Franks.
Okay, so I have a question, obviously, but... I would like to start by saying that I did identify as transgender.
Okay.
I'm 14 years old, teenage girl, and this was about 2 years ago, and I was at a mental health residential. I had not yet converted to Catholicism, but as soon as I said that I was have a gender dysphoria, I was in a residential, like, I had all these issues going on. The doctors and therapists were just like, okay, let's start you on testosterone.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was my first meeting with that doctor. And my parents declined, and they were looked at very shamefully for declining that to me. But 2 years later, looking back, I am mortified. I would be so upset and disgraced with myself and just seeking God's forgiveness if I had mutilated myself in that way. And now, the thing is, though, now at school, since I'm what they call a detransitioner, I guess, at school, if I talk about that, like, talk about the transgender movement in a non-positive way, I'm viewed as transphobic, homophobic, supporting people who do violent acts towards people who are transgender. So I'm not sure what to do about that.
Morgan, God bless you.
How will I be viewed as socially? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. You're an extraordinary person who's been through a great deal at a very young age. Dr. Franks, what would you say?
Yeah, God bless you, Morgan, for listening and for calling in and for everything that you've had to deal with a lot of courage. And God bless your parents, because parents are put under a lot of pressure. They have medical professionals telling them that their kid is going to kill themselves if they don't do these kinds of gender interventions. So your parents probably had to go through a lot. And they had to stand strong and love you through it. So that's it's a beautiful testimony to hear. I'm so glad that you were not put through those treatments because... it would not have, as you know, it would not have made anything better, and it would have, instead of solving a problem, would have created all these new problems. And that's, it's what you describe is actually really common, where like the moment somebody says anything about gender, the fact that they might be autistic, which is a really common it's a common correlation in this population. They might be depressed or anxious. Those are also really other common correlations. Those things don't get treated. And the attitude is if we quote unquote treat the gender thing, everybody will be all better. As far as the social stuff, that is so hard. And it is really challenging for people in your age group because it immediately goes to this level of, well, you must hate people like you're describing. And that's really unfair. And it's really not true. So, I really encourage that you stay close to God and know in your heart of hearts how much he loves you and how much value you have, how special you are. And know that when you get that kind of pressure, that it doesn't reflect who you really are. And I hope also, you can talk to your parents about that, because sometimes there's other schooling options available when a person's in a really hostile school environment. So, so my prayers, and I'm really glad you called.
Morgan, how does that all sit with you? Is there anything else we can do for you, Morgan?
That sounds great. I mean, I'm really just repeating the phrase, blessed are those who are persecuted, because it's high school. Like, I'm going into high school next year. I'm going to be, shamed for a lot of things, but especially for my faith. I mean, I am going to be Catholic and just baptized as of later this month.
Praise God. Congratulations, Mark.
Yeah, congrats.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to be baptized later this month, but, I mean, my friends, they wanted nothing to do with me as soon as I picked up the Bible. So I put it back down, but I see now that it's God's judgment that matters,
Morgan, I can't tell you. I know there are just thousands of people praying for you right now, but also giving thanks that there's such a magnificent young person coming into this church to be our sister in Christ. I'll tell you what, if there's anything that we have that you would like, any book that we publish, I'd love to send you a little book called The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness and Where to Find It. And you can have any other book that we have. I'd be happy to send that to you. And call back anytime, because it's wonderful to get to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, thank you.
Well, you just hang on, Morgan. Don't hang up on us. Edgar's not very good at the phones, so he's going to try to pick you up, right? He's very good at the phones. I'm only kidding. Let's go to Bob in Nebraska. Thank you for waiting, Bob. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Dr. Angela Franks.
Yeah, I caught you on the way back from painting at my other house, and I got to get these guys a call. This morning I discovered my 13-year-old granddaughter, her parents allow her to have an Instagram. And on Instagram, it has her by her first and last name. It has she's located, and she's identifying as bisexual. And I had a discussion with them a few months ago when they mentioned this to me, that if she's not sexually active, how can she identify as bisexual? She talked to her about this. They kind of poo-poo it. Some of their friends are homosexual or lesbian. She's been raised around that type of thing, a mix of friends, so they don't think it's such a big deal. However, I think it's a big deal, especially, you know, this is something that's kind of beyond her. She's only a child. She's only 13. And she's already, you know, received some bullying at school because she's come out as this. And it's like, how does she even know what her sexuality is at right. that age, right?
Yeah.
Unless you've experienced it. You know, if they're not telling me something, but my thing is, you know, it's okay to have a natural affinity or attraction to the same sex, you know, from a deep friendship perspective. But I'm afraid that some of this might be getting confused as, you know, from a sexuality type of thing. She's also had issues with cutting and also anxiety.
Yeah. Bob, I'm going to let Dr. Franks respond just because we're getting near the end of the hour. But hang on, we'll come back to you if I have a minute.
Yeah, Bob, so prayers about that. That's really challenging. I want to reassure you that I don't obviously know what's happening in your granddaughter's situation, but just because somebody identifies as bisexual or lesbian or something does not mean that they are sexually active. It doesn't mean that they are sexually acting out on that. And in fact, it might even be the majority of people, of teenagers, say, who are identifying in a certain way. It doesn't, they won't be acting out sexually in a way that matches that identity. And so that could be your granddaughter's situation. So, you know, that's just something to give you a little hope about. I think the fact you mentioned anxiety and cutting, like, that doesn't surprise me that people, kind of like we were talking about at the beginning of this hour, like, people who have other psychological challenges sometimes address that by going to the body, by going to sex, by, you know, like, it's like, this will make me feel better. This will make me feel like I'm interesting and worthwhile. And of course, for teenagers, for a 13-year-old, like, that's what we want. We want to be interesting. We want people to think we're unusual, but not too unusual, right? We can't be weird. And that's where, like, embracing something like being bi kind of hits the sweet spot right now, right? Because it's kind of cool and it makes you interesting, but it's not like you're, you know, poor Morgan. It's not like you're saying you're like reading the Bible or something. That's just not acceptable. So so there could be just a lot of those identity things going on. And so that's where affirming the real identity of your granddaughter as much as possible, if you're able to help her come to see the things that she's really, that really do make her unique and interesting, and that are like really healthy and God-given, you know, like if she's good at a particular subject in school, or, you know, she's a good artist, or, you know, whatever it is, to kind of double down on the things that really do make her interesting and unique. Pray for her, and as a grandfather, you do have some influence. So be really close to the Holy Spirit and follow his promptings.
Bob, thank you. Lots of calls right here at the end that we weren't able to get to. I'm sorry about that. But I know that that probably just means that Dr. Angela Franks is under a moral obligation to come back and do this with us again. I believe so. I believe this has put an obligation on you. Even though you're very busy, and I know it's hard to get you, but we're just delighted you're here, and thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
This was great. Thank you.
Coming up next, Jimmy Akin, Open Forum. Right after this, Catholic Answers Live.